From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, the California Department of Education revealed a new website which they're calling a high-tech report card for our schools. For parents, it may be the most comprehensive way to assess the state's schools, but a Los Angeles Times analysis finds that the new system, the California School Dashboard, may mislead parents because it grades schools as medium to high performing that in past years were graded as low performing. We'll discuss the dashboard and what tools families can use to find out what public school is best for their child. Join us for Forum. It's coming up next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday, the State Board of Education launched a new website called the California School Dashboard to help parents assess the state's public schools. The dashboard not only includes standardized test scores, but also suspension and graduation rates, how well English language learners fare, and other information. And the new tool is well-timed for Oakland and San Francisco families who are receiving their school placement letters over the next few weeks. But an analysis by the Los Angeles Times finds that the data can be misleading. 50 schools that received below proficient scores for math last year show up as top scorers in the new dashboard. In this hour, we hear about California's new dashboard for school evaluation and discuss how parents can pick the best school for their child. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. We want to welcome Mike Kirst first. Michael Kirst is president of the California State Board of Education and professor emeritus of education at Stanford University's Graduate School of Education. Good to have you back with us, Mike Kirst.
Good to be here.
We also have with us Miranda Martin, who's here in studio. She directs policy with Parents for Public Schools of San Francisco. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we'll be checking in with others, including the charter school vice president of achievement and performance management. But first, let me go to Mike Kirst. And Mike, maybe you can explain this to us. There are a lot of people. In fact, there's somebody who said parents, educators, and the public should need a degree in data analysis to understand our accountability system. I know we've moved from a system which was based simply on test scores, the academic performance index, to something that's color-coded here, and maybe you can break it down for us.
Well, we've tested this in terms of how parents and public can understand this and work with formats, and I think prior criticism has really been directed at our plans rather than what we unveiled. So the basic idea here is that you need multiple measures of student success, including test scores, high school graduation rates, whether students are ready for college and careers, suspension rates, and chronic absence. To understand a school, you need multiple measures. You need to present those in a clean, easy way. And so we have five state indicators at the top that are statewide data, and then four local indicators. In the past, we used a single indicator, test scores by students taken at one day. Think of it this way. You can't drive a car by only watching the speedometer. You must also keep your eye on the road, check the mirrors, monitor the gas tank, and pay attention if the engine light comes on. So parents are also familiar with multiple things. Their report card is they just don't get a single number. Most states give a single number, or they give just a grade of a school, A to F. So we're trying to give a fuller picture of a school's progress. We also have local indicators that are provided locally, including surveys of parent engagement, a local school climate survey. Do kids feel safe there? Are they engaged? Implementation of academic standards and whether the basics are provided, like instructional materials. So I think if you have a landing page, if you will, that has these things. And yes, it not only has a color, but the color is in part of a circle. So if you're really doing well, English language arts, you'll see a color, a circle, and then you'll see it's three quarters filled with our best outcome, which is blue, and you can put it right there. It also tells you much more. It then unfolds. You can click on the second type of report, which is status and change. It shows you how changes were made from last year. And whether you're improving or not improving on these indicators, You can just look at English learners if you want. You can look at, it highlights all the subgroups in a school district, low-income pupils, high-achieving pupils, foster care pupils. So it gives you a first glance, which gives you an overview, and then you can unfold more and more. And it has several purposes, not just to give us a snapshot, but also to provide information on how to improve a school. You can't just improve a school knowing one number. And then to help the school boards look at this in terms of how they budget their local funds. And I think it'll help in cities like help greatly in cities like San Francisco for students to choose schools, because you have quite an extensive choice program up there. Choosing a school on one number strikes me as oversimplified. This is really a boon for them. So we're trying to make it simple and deep at the same time. It is, if you will, a beta version. This will improve over time. We're looking for feedback on it. We'll populate it with more up-to-date data next year. So I think it is more than a number. It focuses on equity. It supports local decision-making. And finally, it's a first step, but it is a bold departure, and there's nothing like this anywhere else in the country.
I understand it's original and new, and it also allows parents, as you said, not to just look at one indicator. I think the analogy has been made, you buy a house or you evaluate an employee, you don't use simply one indication or one criterion. But a lot of the feedback's already coming in, and some of it says it's too confusing or too many metrics or all these colored pies. It's tough to understand. You got 38 slides on the dashboard. And why not, for example, as some have suggested, divide this into academic and non-academic things?
Well, that's a suggestion that's been made. But, you know, I'm not sure what people call non-academic. If a student is chronic absent, these people that want that division, they are calling that chronic absent. They're calling that non-academic, I mean, and I think that is academic. So we'll look at that, but I don't think that's going to help. Yes, it has 37 pages. That's because you can drill down, but that's only if you want to keep clicking and clicking. It has, in effect, an equity report that's on the front, you know, a single page on the front. Then you can go to all student performance and status and change. You can look at various things, but you don't have to, you know, keep clicking and clicking unless you really want to look at something. But we've had a lot of testimony, for example, for people supporting English learners, and they really want to look at how they're doing. And so you can just click and find that. And so it's meant to be simple and deep.
Can I get you to address the other big criticism, which is that the ratings are too high because you're grading on improvement? And in fact, Los Angeles Times did an analysis today that found that elementary school in Southern California, about half of the students in 2015, 2016 did not make state math goals. And now it shows up on the new dashboard as having the highest rating for math. While on the other hand, you have a school in San Mateo County here in the Bay Area where 90% of the students are above proficient in math. And it shows as less proficient than is the school in Southern California. Isn't this kind of misleading for parents?
I haven't seen what they're talking about, but I don't see how that is possible. It gives you the status. So it says, for example, whether and here it is under status and change, it gives what the status is and then whether you're improving. And we don't give an overall indicator. So in the one hand, you could look and say it's really low, but then it says this school is improving rapidly. That's, you know, this is more than 1 year of assessment. So, you know, we don't sum it up, so I don't understand that at all. We haven't combined status and change and improvement or not improvement into a single indicator. So I don't know where they get that.
Well, the positive side of this, I suppose, is it will mean more support for local decision making, will it not?
Yes, it really helps local decision making, and it's not an attempt. The No Child Left Behind era of federal policy went for single indicators, and then using it to shame and blame school districts, prepare lists sent home to parents about your school's not making progress on the test. And then you would, you know, come in with some intervention type negative thing. And so this is really not just for states to oversee local schools and take appropriate actions if there is, if it's really low and not changing, but it also allows local people to figure out what's going on here. How can we improve it? Shaming and blaming is not a guide to how to improve things.
Well, the dashboard is also going to be used for state educators to rate schools and assess what schools need intervention. But if it's misleading or confusing to parents, how are districts going to figure out which schools really need help?
Well, we have, for example, we have all kinds of public support from the Parent Teachers Association. That's one of the largest voluntary organizations in the country. They don't find it confusing, so there's some editorial writers that are confused, but they may be confused on other things. So I don't think it's confusing, and we've worked very hard for that, and time will tell. And if it is too confusing, we can fix it. As I say, this is a beta version. It'll be better a year from now, better 3 years from now, and so on.
We're talking with Michael Kurst, who's joining us from the Stanford campus. He's president of the California State Board of Education, also professor emeritus of education at Stanford University's Graduate School of Education. I want to go now to Samantha Tran, who's joining us by phone. She's Senior Managing Director of Education Policy with Children Now. Samantha Tran, we welcome you to the program. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
What's your view on the dashboard?
You know, at a high level, there's a lot of agreement with what Mike laid out, that, you know, this idea of moving to multiple measures, giving parents and the public a sense of the various indicators that we value in public education and shining a light on that and giving an opportunity to support that local continuous improvement process. I mean, that dashboard concept is a good one. I think some of the challenges that are being raised are, you know, under the hood, right? There are some key kind of policy decisions that we need to keep working on and fixing in order to make sure this is really useful for those multiple purposes, so that it's, you know, crystal clear to the public, so that we can use it to ensure that those schools and districts that are struggling are getting support, and that we're stepping up and providing that support.
Well, what about offering a more effective and perhaps less confusing way? School reform group Parent Revolution, for example, is talking about two symbols only. They're saying it's more difficult and challenging for people who are, let's say, bilingual or English is not their first language, or for people who are not that familiar with, frankly, using computers.
Yeah, we would be supportive of having some type of roll up to provide an opportunity to for a simple access point for the vast number of parents and the public, and then digging a little bit deeper. I mean, it's been pretty clear from the administration that they're not going to move in that direction. So I think many of us are trying to figure out how do we make sure we can communicate it, giving that existing framework. And I think at a minimum, you know, when you think about sitting across the table from a legislator or a leader who's trying to make decisions, you know, we are going to have to figure out how we communicate overall. You know, how is the state doing? How many schools and districts are fundamentally struggling? How many are exceptional and, you know, knocking it out of the park? And, you know, how many are doing okay but could use some additional support for improvement, right? So that ability to kind of step back and make those broader statements, I think, are important for policymakers and the public. But I also believe that these multiple measures really do help inform practice and can give, you know, parents and others the ability to understand in a more nuanced way what's happening at a school.
And in your view, is better superior to the Academic Performance Index, the API?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the API served its purpose, I definitely am sensitive to the criticisms that it was just test scores. I mean, we had fought for many years to include additional measures in that context, you know, grad rates and, a college and career type indicator, which now the state is moving towards, grad rates now and working on a college and career indicator. And I think there's value in looking at the different components, but I also hear that concern of, well, how are we going to communicate this simply as well. So It's as Professor Kirsch was talking about, something that I think the state's going to need to continue to grapple with.
And the system will be online later this month and out in the fall. It is going through a process of evaluation. It's actually on now. It went up yesterday. Excuse me. I want to get that fact out here, too. And talk to Miranda Martin, who's here with us in studio, directs policy for the Parents for Public Schools of San Francisco. Welcome, Miranda. Been through all kinds of metamorphoses here in San Francisco with the lottery and everything else. How does this help people make a choice?
Well, I think that more information for parents is always a good thing. Here in San Francisco, parents do have a choice, and we've really learned that parents are pretty savvy about using data. At least many parents in San Francisco are used to looking at a lot of sources when they're looking at schools. And I think that this really puts more information in their hands so that they can ask really good questions, really informed questions when they're going to schools, when they're talking to other parents about their school experiences, because there really is more than just tests in terms of what makes a good school.
And well, what makes a good school has come under a lot of scrutiny here in San Francisco, particularly because there have been whites in higher test score schools, larger numbers, a concentration of white students in the best schools, frankly. Is this going to perhaps change that?
Well, I think that we saw even last year when San Francisco, as one of the core districts, launched multiple measures of its own, and parents were able to see a different way to look at how schools were doing in the school quality index reports that we got last year. And there was a shift in those reports. Some of the schools that traditionally had gotten very high API scores looked a little bit less good when you looked at equity and took into account how all student groups at the schools were doing. So I think that it's an important element for families to realize that there's something going on underneath the surface and to be able to look more deeply and in a more nuanced way at what's really happening in schools for all students.
We've got a problem of chronic absences, and a lot of cost is based on attendance in terms of revenue and so forth. We've got 7% actually of students, and we're talking about elementary schools largely here, who are chronically absent, who are missing school, dropping out ultimately, and sometimes winding up in the criminal justice system. I mean, is this really going to perhaps help that major concern? Because we're talking about one of these criteria being chronic absences in schools.
Yes, you know, I think that it having this measure out there as one of the things that we know the state is looking at really shines a light on the fact that we've identified attendance as being an important measure that plays into academic success for students. And so I think that in that sense, it may change how people think about the importance of sending their kids to school every day.
And again, Miranda Martin is Director of Policy with Parents for Public Schools of San Francisco. I think we have Elizabeth Robitaille on the line with us. And let me pronounce that name right. It's Robitaille. And are you here with us, Elizabeth?
Good morning. I'm here.
Good morning. Let me tell people who you are. Elizabeth is the Senior Vice President of Achievement and Performance Management with the California Charter School Association. Charter schools account for about 10% of school attendance here and in the state of California. Let's talk about how the new test is going to affect charter schools. How do you see it?
Well,
I'm sorry, the dashboard. I said the new test because I'm still thinking API. My brain is wired to API. How is this going to affect the new dashboard with respect to charter schools as you see it?
Yeah, well, I agree with much of what's been said before. I think that parents and the public and charter schools in general welcome multiple measures and are very excited about the deeper focus on equity that this dashboard will provide. Dr. Kirst talked about that this will really help in terms of parents wanting to choose a school and that choice requires more than a single number. And while I agree with that, I also strongly believe that choice requires comparability. I'm an education researcher, but I'm also a mom of three little boys. And in order to be able to choose a school, I need to be able to compare. If I look at the dashboard and try to pick, for example, in Los Angeles Unified, I have to pick one indicator and then look at schools on a 5x5 matrix across that indicator. So it is going to be challenging for parents who are looking for school choice and a good school for their children to be able to do that without some sort of aggregated index. There is an urgency to this for charter schools. We know that charter schools are a response to parents not being able to have enough choice for high-quality education, and they do have to go through a renewal every 5 years. And so a dashboard will certainly provide a lot of different metrics of how schools are performing, but when it comes to charter renewal, academic outcomes matter most. And so there's not a lot of clarity here about how this will intersect with charter school renewal.
In fact, charter schools, as you said, come up every 5 years for renewal, and they have to demonstrate that student learning has been improved. Are you saying, in effect, that maybe academics needs to be weighed more heavily here and the website measure?
Yeah, we definitely believe that a primary focus on academic outcomes should be able to come through this measure. For example, right now on the dashboard, there is no academic measure for high schools. It is going to be included as a sub-measure of a college and career indicator that is included longer term, but right now there is nothing. And even when it's included as a college and career indicator, it's going to be one of many choices. And so what we worry about is a multiple set of indicators where you could have a sea of green or a sea of blue across a lot of indicators and one or two reds. And an authorizer might look at that. Those are the school districts that make the decisions about whether a charter school can be renewed or not. And they might say, no, sorry, you've got a couple of reds here. We can't renew your school. Or you might have, on the other side, a sea of red and a couple of greens and a school district choosing to renew a chronically underperforming school. And so what this might mean, if we don't get more clarity or some sort of aggregated focus on student outcomes, it might end up, charter schools might end up getting renewed or not, more depending on the local politics than on the academic outcomes that they're delivering.
Now you say multiple measures might be multiple measures to fail, or more reasons to fail, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, we're talking with Elizabeth Robitaille, and I appreciate very much your being with us, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Robitaille is Senior Vice President of Achievement and Performance Management with the California Charter School Association. I'm going to invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. If you have some thoughts about school choice in general, how to make better choices, but also about the new California School Dashboard, questions or comments are welcome, and we invite them, and you are indeed invited to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. You can call that number now and join the program. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments you might have there. The website is kqed.org/forum, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We continue with Miranda Martin, Director of Policy with the Parents for Public Schools. In San Francisco, Samantha Tran, who is Senior Managing Director of Education Policy with Children Now, and Professor Mike Kirst, who is President of the California State Board of Education and Professor Emeritus of Education at Stanford's Graduate School of Education. When we return, we'll hear what you have to say, want your comments and questions. Join us. You can also go to our Facebook page. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. School choice is very much in the spotlight with the launch of a new California school dashboard instead of numbers. California schools now get colors. Red represents the lowest possible performance. Orange is low, yellow is medium, green is high, and blue is very high. Sounds like those warnings we remember after 9/11. It's just like a car dashboard. Red and orange demand attention. With us, Miranda Martin, Director of Policy, Parents for Public Schools of San Francisco, and Samantha Tran, who is Senior Managing Director of Education Policy with Children Now, and Michael Kirst, President of the California State Board of Education and Professor Emeritus of Education at Stanford. And we spoke earlier before the break with the Vice President of Achievement and Performance Management with the California Charter School Association. And I wanted to go to you quickly, Mike Kirst, and get your response to what Elizabeth had to say a lot of people concerned about charter schools, and she expressed some of those concerns. Too many measurements and maybe too many ways to fail.
Well, I think what's important from all responses is this broader agreement that we're on the right track, that more data points and more analysis from those is better than just a single number. And the arguments are really, and criticisms, I think, are really about adaptations of this and what we need to do. But, I think there's general agreement on the concept and that we're moving in the right direction. Now, first of all, the idea of taking it down to 1 to 2 indicators, summative indicators, that would mean rather than having one indicator, we'd have 2 indicators. And that's really all people would look at. I remember under our old system, the test score was used by real estate agents, and they used that single number. They're going to oversimplify the whole thing. So I think there's a danger there that all you've added is one number in that regard. Second of all, what are the weights? How would you weight things? I mean, would you give chronic absence 5% and test scores 80%? Would you give suspensions 2% or what? You're picking the numbers out of the air. And so I think looking at five numbers is, in a glance, better than artificially creating weights and ending up with oversimplification where somebody's guessed at what ought to be. So I really think that critics don't have an alternative system. We will be identifying the lowest performing schools by some kind of summative measure. We have to, under the federal law, identify the lowest 5%. So the idea of how to make a summative judgment on these numbers, rather than just boiling them all down to 1 or 2, the board will discuss at its meeting in May.
All right, we're going to hear from you, our callers and emailers, and we do want to get you involved in this, but we have a couple of other guests here I want to go to quickly and just get their take. Beginning, Miranda Martin, with you, other ways that you can actually advise parents in addition to the dashboard to making school choice? Can you give us some wisdom?
Yes. We think that it's always important to get as much information as possible, and that's a lot of our mission at Parents for Public Schools is to help families figure out, you know, how do I look at schools? How do I figure out what's a good fit for my kids? And so we always encourage that parents, if they have the opportunity, visit the school, take a look around, talk to the principal, and also talk to other families who have children who go to the school. And we actually offer a service called the Parent Ambassador Service. If folks don't know a family who goes to a particular school, maybe their neighborhood school, they can call us and get connected with somebody who can tell them firsthand what it's like to be at that school and answer their questions.
Of course, this is a subject for another day, but the restrictive zoning rules that exist and the concomitant high housing prices make it hard to have neighborhood school districts in San Francisco specifically. But let me go to you on this, Samantha Tran. What else would you suggest that can be helpful to parents, in terms of choosing the right school, getting the right fit for their kids?
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciated the comments that were just made. I mean, I think in addition to looking at the state indicators that will be color coded, it is really important to have a deeper sense about, you know, what the feel of the school is like. I remember with my own daughter, you know, going from school to school, and you know, in addition to looking at the test scores and some of these these data points that you can compare across sites, talking with the principal, getting a sense of their leadership strategy, walking into classrooms, seeing, you know, teachers at work in practice with kids, were some of the most valuable takeaways that I had, and then talking with other parents about the culture of the school and the welcoming environment. The state is trying to move in a direction where we'll be able to capture some of that more nuanced data through local indicators, some surveys of parents and students and the like. I think a lot more work needs to be done on that front to make that information useful and accessible. And I know that's something that many of the advocates have been focused on, so that in addition to, you know, going to the site yourself, being able to have some type of access to information through this web-based portal will be helpful.
And let me go to our callers. We go first to you, Carnella. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
My question is, you know, I'm a third generation African American, raised three children in the city. My oldest is 50. My youngest is 27. My public school experiences were fabulous. But all three of my children, the systems just failed them completely. So I haven't had an opportunity to look at the new dashboard, but I'm wondering, are there going to be specific information and use that will be useful to parents of black children?
Mike Hurst.
Yes, I think that's where you get into this trade-off between just having a few simple things and having, as we're doing, a simple thing, and then being able to drill down. You will be able to look at the performance in every school, in every indicator for African-American children in depth. So if you just want to look at suspension rates for African-American children, it's one click away. If you want to look at college and career readiness, that'll be one click away. And so this is really strong on that. Now, and the opening landing page, which is the first page you see, has the total number of student subgroups. Race and ethnicity is part of that. And then it has the total groups in red or orange, meaning having problems. So in one example, you will have there are five total subgroups in this school, and there's one subgroup in red and orange. So you'll be able to see that right away and then be able to ascertain whether that is an African-American group by clicking it. So, yes, this is very beefed up on that.
And we thank Carnella for the call and go right to another caller, and that's you, Argyris. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. There's a website that parents use in the Bay Area called greatschools.org that does a very interesting thing. A lot of parents use it to compare schools. It shows one big score from 1 to 10 for the school, but it explains to the parent why that school is high or low. So I was wondering whether the makers of the dashboard got any inspiration or spoke to the makers of that, of greatschools.org, because it seems to be a very useful website, and actually a lot of real estate sites also use it for comparison of schools in a particular region. And I'll take my answer of the air. Thank you.
All right. I thought Miranda Martin might have been familiar with it because she smiled when I said something to you.
Yeah, I'm familiar with greatschools.org. And, you know, I do think it's a source that is one of many data points that families use when they look at schools. I think that the new state resource is much more nuanced. And I think it's kind of what we've been talking about on this show, that having multiple measures really gives a more complete picture for parents. Sometimes when you look at a single number, you might have an idea about a school that doesn't really represent what's going on at the school. So, you know, I think all getting information from a lot of sources is always a great thing to do. But I really appreciate that the new dashboard has more than just one number.
Well, we're getting some comments here. I'm going to go to more calls, but let me read some of the comments. A listener writes, I went to a high school with low test scores, mostly serving Latino students. We had fabulous teachers that private schools tried to steal away. I got a great education. Another listener writes, it's a bit disingenuous, isn't it, to criticize the new evaluation system because some low-ranked schools have better rankings? Isn't part of the purpose to use different criteria to make a more accurate evaluation tool? If it didn't change the rankings of some schools, it wouldn't be much of a change, would it? And Griffin writes, I don't appreciate the assumption that as a parent I am easily confused by reports in which one can drill down to attain more granular information. Choosing schools is something most parents here in San Francisco put many hours into, and I believe most of us welcome the opportunity to see what indicators are being used and assessed. Let me go to more of your calls. Anna Barra is next. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I wanted to talk about the attendance, and I want to talk about my personal experience from Cupertino School District. I started receiving threat letters from regarding my son's attendance, which were true, by the way, but it happened in a very short period that he had to go through physiotherapy and Invisalign, dental works, and most of it had to be done on school time because after school he's doing a lot of sports. and the sports injuries had to be taken care of. So I had no clue what these threat letters mean, and I discovered that the letters are coming from the school district's computer, while the people who know my son, or theoretically are supposed to know him, have no clue about these letters. There's no regard to his grades and how he's doing and how he's making up everything he misses.
Well, Annabera, forgive me. I'm going to cut to the chase here. Do you welcome this idea of the dashboard that you've been hearing spelled out here in this program so far, then, for your son and for those like him?
I want to say that the whole system is, to me, it was wrong. It was a terrible experience, and I'm shocked that people who are supposed to serve teenagers, human beings, are treating them as computer files.
Well, I certainly appreciate you giving us that perspective. Miranda Martin, you're, I think, on the verge of saying something here in response. Go ahead. She's in the San Francisco Public Schools.
Yeah.
Her son is.
And this is something that we have heard. And I think that in some ways, having attendance on the dashboard might serve to help families be aware of how important attendance is without maybe using some of the shame and blame tactics that, I think that school districts have wanted to make sure that families know that it's important that their kids go to school. And sometimes the letters can be worded in a way that, can feel kind of scary. I think hopefully school districts are moving away from that type of communication into something that's a little bit more proactive. But I hear what you're saying, and I have heard that before.
And can I go to you on this, Samantha Tran, get your response?
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea, Miranda said it nicely, of, making sure that we're elevating the importance of kids showing up. I mean, the research shows pretty clearly that if a child is chronically absent, they're on track to not being successful and potentially not graduating, right?
It also affects the revenue coming into the schools, too. I mean,
there's
just practical
that,
side of it, yeah.
Yeah, from the kids' perspective, in their long-term success, it's critical. Now, the point that the parent raised about, medical needs and or, you can think of mental health needs. There are situations where we need to help parents and the schools communicate so that, those can be an excused absence and that, you don't get into this dynamic where you're doing the shame and blame, but you're really trying to find the right support systems for the child and the family.
And again, Samantha Tran is Senior Managing Director of Education Policy, Children Now. And here's Pablo. Pablo, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say thank you very much for putting something like this together. It's really, really helpful. I'm a former educator, currently a child psychologist. I've worked in all over the Bay, East Bay, San Francisco, South Bay, in schools that are very, very underperforming, very poor urban neighborhood schools, as well as very high-achieving, highly resourced schools. And I have a child going into kindergarten next year, and getting information on schools is really challenging. So just first want to say thank you very much for, putting something like this together. It's really tremendously helpful for parents. But my question is, as a psychologist, when we create metrics, we're very mindful about filtering out covariant kind of variables. And so the biggest thing in my experience that really impacts, a child's achievement in school is not only the socioeconomic status, but the parents' ability to be available to them. And so I'm wondering about how that has been handled in the dashboard, if there's a way to kind of filter to account for that covariance, and if that affects the kind of the standard scores at all, which might change something from green to red and vice versa once you control for that factor.
Is there, Michael Kirst, anything about parental involvement here that's even vaguely in the metrics?
Not only vaguely, it's featured. So we've talked very little about the fact that there's these statewide measures that you can standardize statewide. And then there are four local indicators that we are going to vet the surveys or data collection processes, and one of those is parent engagement. And so districts will be looking, among other things, for sending surveys to parents. We are allowing districts to use different surveys for different local contexts, but the state will vet them for validity and reliability. So it is a mandatory part of it. Also is something called a local school climate survey. We're working on this, but again, districts will use different ones that they can choose from. This will survey, in most cases, I think, students. Are you engaged in your school? Do you feel that somebody knows what you're doing and how you're doing? This is the more subtle parts, and I don't know of any attempt anywhere in the past to so systematically get top-down standardized data and bottom-up local data that's very nuanced.
I've got a question, and I'll go to you on this again, Mike Kirst, as well as a listener comment that I'd like your reaction to. But Cynthia writes, I hear the talk of using online websites to choose the best school. What about parents who don't have access to computers? Mike Kirst?
Yeah. I think that we'll be working on paper versions of this and thinking about how to do that at this point. So we can also mail some of this. So that's something that we're working on and seeking parent feedback about.
You want some strong pushback?
Yeah.
All right. Here's a listener who says, this is a terrible idea meant to deceive and confuse us parents and make it more difficult for us to hold teachers and administrators accountable. It's unbelievable that clear academic metrics, the number one reason we send our kids to school, is overlooked in this new room of smoke and mirrors. Instead, politically correct nonsense such as equity is injected into the conversations.
Well, that's back to the single indicator idea of just including test scores, and right there in the front are English learner language arts assessment, mathematics assessment. We will be adding science assessment in future years as we develop the assessments. And there's more information about all kinds of subgroups and improvement or not improvement on all these assessments. On the college and career one in this version, if you just press on that one, it says go to the 11th grade test scores. So that is, that's just an argument to go back to the past.
Here's a caller from Vacaville. Heather, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a son who has autism, high functioning, so Asperger's. And we've been in the public school system since he was diagnosed at 3. And I'm wondering how this new reporting system will help parents with special needs kids. It's always been a struggle for us to find schools and information on schools and the way they serve special ed kids. So I'm wondering if that information will be on there and how it's reported and shared.
Again, I'm going to have to defer to you, Mike Kirst.
Yes, it's if you... It's literally one click away. If you press on subgroups on the front page, you'll get students with disabilities, and it'll tell you their performance. So I'm looking at a sample here, and it's doing very well. This school, it's blue. The total number of students with disabilities, what their current status is, and is whether they're improving or not improving. And that would be, of course, on the assessments, but on absence and other things as well. So, again, this is breaks down these groups, and you can really see what's going on inside the school.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Oakland and welcome Alicia. Good morning, Alicia.
Hi, good morning. This is a great program. I just wanted to make a couple of points. One is, as an educator for close to 15 years, I've noticed that the schools that I've worked at, if they have high poverty, if it's a high poverty area, the scores tend to get to be lower, and the support just tends to be almost non-existent from parents, but it's because they're usually busy working two or three jobs. The other thing, someone made a point about parental involvement, and I believe that's highly important, but the way I look at parental involvement in a child's learning is in the home, like reading to the child, turning off the TV, looking at homework, talking to the child. So that's how I looked at it.
All right. I thank you for those points. Let me go actually to Samantha Tran on those points. Certainly what she says about high poverty rates and lower test scores is true, and parental involvement may be as important in the home as it is in the school. Get some thoughts from you, Samantha.
Yeah, no, I think that piece around parental involvement is critical, and it kind of goes back to that earlier conversation about you know, how we integrate that into the system and shine a light on it and make sure that we, you know, have surveys and ways to try to capture that engagement locally, and we need to figure out how to systematize that a little bit better at the state level while still having some local variance and flexibility. The other point that I think is embedded in her comment is the issue around, you know, kind of how we're setting the standards for these different indicators, and I would say the achievement indicators in particular, and this goes back to the LA Times piece that talked about, you know, comparing the just looking at the status of the test scores and kind of how the dashboard creates this color-coded system. And I think, you know, there's a policy conversation here about, you know, do we need to focus in on the absolute outcome for kids, right? So if kids are fundamentally struggling and not doing well on the test, we need to make sure that's crystal clear. At the same time, I do think there's value in lifting up if a school is making dramatic improvement, right? If the kids have been historically struggling but they're moving by leaps and bounds, that's important to value. I think, you know,
but they still might not be coming up to snuff. I mean, that's
right.
The concern.
So I think that's the challenge, right? And so as we work with this dashboard, it may be something we need to revisit. And you know, an example of that is when you look at the color coding system, there's a you know, one space where you could be identified as a yellow, right? And for purposes of this system, a yellow is kind of like, yeah, you're not doing great, but we're not going to call you on it. You know, there's not mandatory support, or you don't have to put it in your local plan. And one of those categories are, you know, the overall school, the average kid could be at the lowest level on the assessment, and there's barely change. You know, that they're making modest, if any, improvement, and that's considered a yellow. And I think, you know, when we think about wanting to highlight the improvement of schools and really celebrate that, and at the same time, you know, be really clear if a school is struggling, especially on some of these academic indicators. You know, that I think that's something that many of the advocates have lifted up and will be continuing to talk with policymakers about.
Well, perhaps this is my mindset as a longtime educator, but I can't help thinking about the fact that if you have a student, for example, who begins at a failing level and then works very hard and diligently and comes up to a D or a C level, that's improvement, and you have to assess it as improvement, even though it isn't necessarily the kind of performance that you would want students to have. Let me go to you on this, Miranda Martin. Let's talk about, again, parents in the home.
Well, I do think that measuring parent engagement is really exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to roll out in the future. But it is something that I don't think you, again, can just look at one measure and say, oh, we have a lot of people in the PTA or volunteering at school, because parent involvement involves so many things. You know, it's about what you're doing at home. Are you going to museums with your kids? Are you talking about what happened in school?
It's a tough metric, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, to really get down to crystallize it and so forth. I don't know. Mike Kirsch, want to weigh in here?
Yes, it is, and we're not sure how to do it, and so that's why we will not be really doing anything with that in this first rollout. We're working on how to define it in the many dimensions, but there isn't going to be a standard state, I think, single way to do this, and I think how parents are involved varies by the nature of the district. And we have, you know, so many districts. On the issue of, on the yellow issue here, California has 11,200 schools. And so we have to identify about 550 schools for careful scrutiny and perhaps intervention just for the federal law. So if you include schools that in this intervention effort that are improving significantly, even though they're very low, we're going to be in thousands and thousands of schools. So you there are limits on you have to pick and triage your priorities. And so That's why I think people need to keep in mind how big the state is and that we're dealing with 11,200 schools.
I'm glad you give us that state perspective. I want to end, though, on a local note with you, Miranda Martin, if I may, because San Francisco school parents and families are going to find out tomorrow, I believe, whether or not their kids get into the school of choice. And some thoughts from you on that?
Well, they may not find out tomorrow. The letters are mailed tomorrow. And I think that my thoughts on that are just when folks get their letters, hopefully a lot of people will be very happy with what they got. There always are people who didn't get their choice. And we just encourage people to really take a look at the school that you were assigned for. And as I've been saying, you know, go visit it, ask some questions, because I can tell you on a personal note, the school that I was assigned when my daughter started kindergarten was on a school closure list. It was a very unpopular school, and it ended up being a fantastic community that served us very well. So I think it's just important to make sure that you are looking at more than just the test scores. Make sure that you give the school a chance. But then there are certainly more rounds of the lottery, and we can help you at PPS if you need help.
Well, we'll leave it there. And again, we thank Miranda Martin, who's Director of Policy at PPS, Parents for Public Schools of San Francisco. Thanks to Samantha Tran from Children Now. And thanks to Michael Kirst, President of the California State Board of Education. And thanks to you, our listeners. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour's repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And we are going to continue our forum program with Larry Diamond in the hour ahead. We're going to talk about democracy, and we're also going to talk about things related to the budget that has just been rolled out earlier today. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, engagement producer Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, executive producer Holly Kernan. Thank you for listening. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.